Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher. Today I talk to Linda Terry. She's the Executive Director of the Social Planning Council of Cambridge and North Dumfries, who will be holding their annual Poverty Symposium this Thursday with the topic of Solutions to Poverty Includes Media. Think about how often you've heard stories about the poor in the mainstream media. What kind of picture does it paint? What more can all the people in the media do to create answers and not just restate the problem for the umpteenth time? Teaming up to do something about poverty is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, a few months back, in a fit of writer's block, I cooked up a piece for my GuelphToday.com column about the upside down of Guelph, a pop culture-inspired consideration of the idea that despite all the good news stories about Guelph, there are actually a lot of bad news stories that need the light of media attention as well. Not enough social service support for the homeless, not enough mental illness treatment for the ones suffering, a plague of suicides on campus that no one can explain. If Guelph is so great, how are we missing these people? It turns out that the Social Planning Council of Cambridge and North Dumfries had the same idea in organizing their 12th annual poverty symposium. The group was looking at how the media, mainstream and independent, have to be a part of the highlighting of the problems of poverty in terms of creating solutions to them. To quote their website, "Great work is being done across the region to find solutions to poverty, and the SPCCND is hosting an event to highlight the importance of including media in this work. At the symposium, representatives from a variety of media sources will provide information and inspiration on ways to become more media savvy. Together, we will explore effective methods for increasing awareness of local poverty issues through the media." And I'll be one of the variety of media sources talking there, but before taking part, I was interested in talking to Linda Terry about the basis for this year's symposium topic. Why focus on the media? What can the media do to help? Is there a possibility that media coverage now is doing more harm than good? I know I struck gold with that Guelph Today column, and I've been racking my brain trying to think of ways to follow that up through my work on Politico. So in a way, I'm taking part in this symposium to not just offer answers, but I also have some questions of my own. So I caught up with Linda by phone from her Cambridge office. Linda Terry, thank you so much for joining me today. I know you are very, very busy right now.
I sure am, but it's a good busy.
Well, it is for a good cause. But to begin with, can you talk a bit about your organization and sure. The work you do?
Okay. We're the Social Planning Council of Cambridge and North Dumfries. We are a registered nonprofit with charitable status. We were founded in 1989 through some work that the city at the time was doing and thought it might be a good idea to have a social planning council.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, it's grown from a very small organization that did very, very local work to more of a regional organization where we're asked to sit at various planning tables throughout the region and also do various things like what I will eventually talk about, the Poverty Symposium. We also, our main work is kind of divided in three areas. One is community-based research, which we publish a community trends report, which will be coming out as soon as the new census, the long-form census, is released.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a social profile, but most importantly, it is a report that looks at service data trends. So we collect data from various organizations in our community, such as, give an example, a food bank usage, and we track trends over 10 years. At this point, we can take a look at whether things are rising or lowering. Most things are going up and not lowering. But it's also a valuable tool for not only our city politicians and staff, but also our agencies that we support as they program, plan, and they also look at funding proposals, they use it. And then we do a whole community engagement piece, which is an annual poverty symposium. We also do renters forums where we talk about rights of tenants, so that's more geared to community members.
Mm-hmm.
We also, when called upon, do consultations such as basic income, looking at the Ontario Standards Employment Act, which we did a couple of years ago, which is now a lot of news has been released. We've worked on the 15 and fairness. And then when there is an election, whether it's municipal all the way up to federal, we do all candidates meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And those all candidates meetings are more social issue based. We also host iSearch My Community, which is a regional human service database. And then, of course, as I said, we do we sit on planning groups, such as we facilitate our affordable housing roundtable here locally, and we also sit on things like the Immigrant Partnership Council, Children's Planning Table, Rural Realities, and many more.
So the symposium, sounding like, you know, a big word, symposium, is just kind of one small area that you're focused on. But of course, with the symposium this year, and me being a part of it, I did want to ask how this comes together.
Sure.
How do you choose a topic? How do you find an area of focus in the midst of all the work that you do, and
right.
sort of break that down into?
Well, first of all, the Poverty Symposium, as we know, as this year's will be the 12th annual,
mm-hmm.
and this is one of our signature events. So we spend a lot of time planning for this and consulting with stakeholders about where is a good place to go. This coincides with, you go back to last year's Poverty Symposium, which was upside down thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, we asked the question on our evaluation, do you want to continue this discussion? And about 25 people signed up. They're across the region because the symposium is a regional symposium. And we had people from various sectors, people with lived experience. We have politicians at the table, both regional councilors and some city councilors. And one of the things that we realized early on, and these people have been meeting since September, that one of the issues that we really need to do is make Waterloo Region residents aware of the poverty issue in their community,
mm-hmm.
And wanted to focus on a public awareness campaign. So at that point, we kind of stepped back and we said, well, how do we actually do that? So we decided, well, it might be kind of interesting, because this group is called Solutions to Poverty Waterloo Region, that the focus of this symposium would be Solutions to Poverty Includes Media.
Right.
Because we do want to get media engaged, that they should not only be responsible to occasionally write a story about poverty, but to actually be a partner in poverty reduction. So this year's symposium is the main focus, I would suggest, is exploring what it's like to experience poverty in an affluent community like
mm-hmm.
Waterloo Region.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about how to make people aware, and when we were talking before, I mentioned this column I wrote for Guelph Today,
mm-hmm.
where it got such a huge reaction, and I've since been told, and I don't say this to brag about it, but that it's like the fourth most read thing on Guelph Today in about a year and a half of publishing. It does make me wonder, though, having tapped into this, mm-hmm. if people aren't already aware. First of all, are of course aware of the problem of poverty, and second of all, have been sort of waiting for a more, I guess, direct approach to it. You know, someone to say pointedly in the midst of all these stories we see about. I know that in the notes I've been given for the symposium, it mentions the hashtag
mm-hmm.
WR Awesome in Guelph. We have hashtag Guelph Proud, and the idea is there's all these awesome things. Meanwhile, what we don't directly addresses that in the midst of the awesomeness,
mm-hmm.
there are tremendous deficits, people facing tremendous difficulties that we don't give equal weight to. And
exactly.
But my point being, though, that I felt like my column, again, not to brag, but it was kind of like a watershed. People are like, finally, somebody is saying there is another side to things.
Yeah. And I think I have to say kudos for you, because I would suggest in Waterloo region, we have not really gotten that word out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is occasion, obviously, that, you know, we do poverty symposiums and we get press coverage, but it's a day. It's mm-hmm. a day in someone's life. I'm looking more for having some sort of impact in regards to my next door neighbor.
Right.
You know, great example. My former next door neighbor would say to me, "Oh, what's all that going on down at the shelter?
Mm.
See a lot of people hanging out there. How could that be in Cambridge? Or how do you know, just comments people would make about people on OW.
Right.
The stigma, the whole bit. So I think this here, you know, coming to this poverty symposium, we really want to be able to highlight what this issue is in our community, that as we all talk about this is a great place to live, work, and play, I do think that for many it isn't. And I think that story needs to be told, but in a way that is respectful, very respectful for the people that are telling that story. But I also think, going back to the media, that I will give the example. Our keynote speaker in the afternoon is Stephen Burst, who is a reporter and who was the main author and architect of Code Red at the Hamilton Spectator in mm-hmm. 2008. That report discovered a pretty astounding fact, which was people in the downtown core of Hamilton's life expectancy is 20 years less than the outer suburbs of Ancaster and Dundas.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing. I mean, that really took Hamilton by a big surprise. People kind of thought, oh, yeah, maybe. But when it's in print like that, and they have continued on through the years that poverty reduction is part of their main focus, so much so that the managing editor was one of the founding members of the Hamilton Poverty Roundtable and is now their chair.
Right.
So they get it. They know that it's important, that it's not an occasional article. It is part of their mission and vision as well.
And it's also a bigger issue than you cited the examples of people saying, well, what's going on at the shelter and what's going on with people who are on who are receiving government assistance. We're talking about sort of very small indicators of the overall, because of all the people who are not going to the shelter, who are
right,
not
exactly
getting social assistance as
right.
well.
And how many people are just one paycheck away from being in poverty?
Right.
I think that there's also a huge conversation that needs to be had around decent work, the fact that we're living in a world of precarious employment, and that affects people from high school dropouts right up to PhDs.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is no longer a sense that you will build your career with one employer. You will have several. You will be very lucky if you go beyond living contract by contract and also having benefits.
Right.
So I think it's a really big picture. I think people need to be aware that people who are poor look like just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this great example. I went to a basic income consultation in January, and the Kitchener City Hall was packed. And they had us divided up in tables, loads of questions to ask. And at my table was a colleague that I know quite well, four other people who I personally know are on OW or ODSP, and another man. And at the end of the 2 hours, after this very thorough discussion, this man said, you know, it's really good all us middle-class people came out tonight to talk about this really important issue.
Right.
And I'm thinking, so you're sitting with four people who are poor, but you know what? They look just like you and me.
Yeah.
So I think that really struck me that evening of, like, I think we're on the right thing, that we do need to do public awareness. So hopefully through this poverty symposium, we'll start looking at strategies for working with the media to get that message out.
Yeah, everybody thinks poor people look like hobos with patches on
right.
their clothes and with a bindle, and
yeah.
that's their life. It is interesting. I do wonder if, because it's so hard to talk about or to get the media to talk about the issue, And I think that has to do with size. Poverty isn't something that's going to be solved with one story or one series of stories. And it's not going to be solved nationwide by just talking about what's happening in Hamilton, because perhaps there are different solutions per region in terms of how you approach poverty. And I do wonder if we're actually making the issue bigger when we're talking about the working poor, and we're talking about precarious part-time work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's almost self-defeating. And I'm just sort of spitballing, brainstorming here, because mm-hmm. it's hard enough to talk about the issue. It's big enough when we're talking about people needing shelters and right. needing to access food banks. It's even bigger when we're talking about people who are on, like, the razor's edge.
Exactly. It's huge. You know, it's like, and I think that probably as we explore trying to do public awareness campaigns, we will start focusing in on, you know, one to start off with. Interestingly enough, at the time that the Solutions Group came together, we also decided to apply to the Ontario Trillium Foundation mm-hmm. for a collective impact grant around this. And we couldn't, unfortunately, get funding for public awareness, but because we had to look at a specific population.
Right.
And so we chose seniors living in poverty. It's quite interesting, because we thought we had that problem solved
right.
with providing guaranteed income support. Well, we're not, because if you go down to our local shelter, you will see seniors sleeping there in the evening. We have people showing up at our food bank who are seniors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some very interesting pieces around seniors who are renting. 50% of those are in, you know, close to eviction, because they don't know where they're going to get next month's rent.
Right.
You know, or you even have people who are still living in the family home, which appears that they are house rich but cash poor.
Right.
So they're finding it difficult to pay their taxes, do the upkeep. But then again, where are they going to downsize to?
Mm-hmm.
And there's issues around even affordable housing at the region, in which seniors can sign up for subsidized housing, but there's a wait list for seniors.
Yeah.
So I think that will be our first, look at the issue of poverty, and we'll look at seniors living in poverty as our first go.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, it's huge. So, yeah, you know, like, where do you start? And I think, you know, we're kind of forced into looking at the senior piece, which is great, because we have the OTF grant, and so we're going to have to deliver on that. So I think that's really appropriate.
Yeah, and that's something I always bring up when we're talking about granting and why, you know, some things get funded, some things don't, and these granting procedures are also another sort of level of bureaucracy, because they're so sometimes so narrowly focused that you have to sort of pick and choose where to mm-hmm. put your efforts. I was looking at some research I was going to bring up at the symposium, and one of the things I found was a lecture that was done here at the U of G by John Stackhouse, who used to be the editor of the financial pages of the Globe.
Mm-hmm.
It was about media coverage of poverty. I mean, he's now like a vice president at Royal Bank, so I'm not sure how much of a thumb he has on the issue now. But one of the interesting things he found to me was that people tend to trust what the media says on poverty versus people who live it every day, which is like the NGOs, the churches, the food banks.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that fascinating, because on the one hand, here we are saying the media isn't doing enough. The media isn't showing the right things to give people a better idea of what the poverty picture really looks like. But people, and this was a few years ago, so it might be different now, but I can't imagine it would be, but people tend to believe what they see on TV over and above people on the ground who are mm-hmm. working with this every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that that's an interesting point, but I also would suggest that it does happen in regards to places like Hamilton with their Spectator,
mm-hmm.
because I think they have taken the right approach. And because of their their participation in the Hamilton Roundtable, for example, where people who live in poverty sit around that table.
Right.
And they have a very strong message and how they want to be heard. So they're treated as equals around that table, and thus I think their message gets out through places like The Spectator. At our poverty symposium, we will have a speaker on both the morning panel and the afternoon panel, Deirdre Pike, who does freelance writing for The Spectator. She also is online at the Waterloo Record. But in the afternoon, she's going to talk about how she's involved with local initiatives, working with people with lived experience, and how best to get their stories out.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear what he's saying, but I think that there's a way to get the correct message out.
For sure. Something else that came from that, though, was he made the point that a lot of people are very giving. That, you know, we give to aid organizations, people that do work overseas, foreign aid, even here at home, giving to food banks around, you know, the big drives at Thanksgiving, Christmas, and things. And that's in so much as people are very charitable, it does seem that when we are talking about reporting on poverty, a lot of people look at that and go, well, if only they would, you know, get a job or get clean.
Yeah.
There is quite the disparagement in terms of sort of what people do in terms of their actions, in terms of how they think when they see poverty shown to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I, unfortunately, you know, just going back to charitable donations, I think that's wonderful that people will give it, you know, the holiday time or the food drive. But it's more than that.
Right.
So, you know, that's, you know, we continue to want to have those donations and whatever. But I think that it's a much bigger piece in regards to policy.
Yep.
At federal, provincial levels, regional levels. So a great example of what has been really successful is that we assist in the Living Wage Initiative here in Waterloo Region and doing calculations every year of, you know, the living wage. And this year it went down to $15.42 from $16.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask, but why? We researched it, and guess what? It was the federal government enacting the child tax benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things like that in regards to policy at levels of government does actually have impact on the daily lives of people in our community. So that's where we really need to push. I would say, yeah, keep giving, but I think it's a big, much bigger picture.
Right.
Hopefully with the increase of minimum wage in Ontario, that will have a significant impact. So I think, you know, I think it's a twofold approach.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we also have the basic guaranteed income experiment in three places in the province, too, including Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem to be addressing that policy picture you're talking about. But again, the reporting, and this is just anecdotal from things I see streaming mm-hmm. by on social media, but the balance of the reporting seem to be more on the effect on business in terms of employers and how many people they can employ and what this mm-hmm. would cost them on their bottom line, and less about what $15 minimum wage could mean for someone who works 40
exactly.
hours a week at a Walmart or a McDonald's or what have you.
Exactly. I mean, I know that, you know, there's certainly the naysayers who say that this is going to drive business out of business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I personally lived in the mid-90s in England, and at the time, they did not even have a set minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge discussion in the 3 years that we lived there, and they finally did enact a minimum wage. And having conversations with friends and relatives there, and someone who is actually was a professor at the University of Warwick Business School, they did research there, and there was no significant impact of driving business out of business.
Right.
What it did, it actually helped business, because now people could afford, and in, hopefully in this case, when they're going from $11.40 an hour to $14 as of January, they'll be spending money in their community at
mm-hmm.
the local stores. I don't think they see that side of it. And I would kind of like to see the research that they keep saying, it's going to do all those things.
And that's a great point, too. And there's also the more value to the job then, because I used to work in a hotel, And there were a couple of guys who were on the cleaning staff who had been drawing disability but had quit because they made more staying on disability than they did having a job. And a lot of people would hear that story and go, oh, lazy bums, you know, getting their government handout. What I heard was it's more in their financial best interest to be sick and not work than to be well and working. Because I, and again, maybe I'm just speaking from my own experience. I would much rather be someone busy and productive and working than someone who's just, you know, staying at home and not doing anything, because I make more, the government basically paying me to stay at home.
Well, yes, and I think the other case to, and I you know, I'd like to meet that person that they're referring to, because most people I know who are on OW or ODSP, and ODSP, obviously, people have issues like disabilities, but I would suggest that the vast majority of those people want to be out to work, contributing. And also, I think we forget about the fact that if you are working, you're also doing something called paying taxes.
That's right.
You know, I think we forget about that as well. So there will be an impact there as well. And I think that, you know, I'm very encouraged to see this happening, and I think it's another case of how people really have, over the last couple of years, places like the Workers Action Center, Fairness in 15, who have really worked so hard on getting the message out. The couple of weeks before, I guess it was late May, early June, there were just calls every day, get the word out, tweet it out, call your MPP. And you know what? It worked. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, when people say, oh, well, you know, advocacy doesn't work, well, it does. So I'm really proud of the fact that the SBC was part of that movement. And so we'll just wait to see how it all unfolds. But, you know, I'm very happy that that's where we're going.
Yeah, and the other side of you know, media and journalism, the could be considered advocacy, because it's often about reporting on the issues and the concerns that people aren't seeing and that their politicians aren't talking about. And it does sometimes feel like in the media we are more reactive to a press release from City Hall versus you know, the regular work that social services in our cities are doing every day. Maybe to wrap up, in terms of, you know, the symposium's about media solutions to poverty, and that is very important, and I wholeheartedly agree, which is why I'm taking part. But in terms of for people who are not in the media but are perhaps interested in addressing these issues, what are some of the other solutions or actions people can take on their own to help raise awareness or to help do something about the issue?
Yeah, I think, as I just said, I think people need to talk to their MPs and MPPs, their regional councillors, and make them aware that, you know, we need to have significant movement on things like at a federal level, a national housing strategy, at a provincial level, I would say PharmaCare. Actually, just was listening to someone talking about, you know, how it's great they brought in PharmaCare for universal PharmaCare for up to, I believe it's the age of 24. But this needs to be across the board, because, you know, again, we have a universal health care system, but we don't have universal drug coverage. So it's great that you can go to a doctor and be seen or go to a hospital, but we know of facts where people show up at a doctor and says, this is my problem. They diagnose, they prescribe, and then that person can't fulfill the prescription because they don't have the money, because they don't have benefits. So I would just strongly, you know, have people make sure, you know, do read the paper, but also, you know, look at places like the Social Planning Council, where we put out lots of different work, and also to get out there and advocate, and also go vote. Thank you, Adam, as well. We're really delighted that you'll be with us on Thursday, and we're really looking forward to it.
And thank you, Linda, for in the midst of your busyness, agreeing to take part in today's podcast. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you, Adam.
And once again, that was Linda Terry, Executive Director of the Social Planning Council of Cambridge and North Dumfries. You can learn more about their work at spccnd.org. And if you'd like to check out the 12th Annual Poverty Symposium, Solutions to Poverty Includes Media, it takes place at the Preston Memorial Auditorium at 1458 Hamilton Street in Cambridge this Thursday, June 15th at 8:30 a.m. and running till 3 p.m. You can get tickets at eventbrite.ca or by following the link at the SPCCND website. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale, the host for the Guelph Politicast, as always, is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is also the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.